morning, Beatles fans. I'm Jennifer Vanderslice, and welcome back to episode 13 of I Saw the Beatles. This week's guest is a man who everybody who's ever met him has referred to him as charming and a gentleman. His name is Ivor Davis, and he had the pleasure of going on tour with the Beatles for their first U.S. tour for, I think, 30 some odd days in August 1964. Good morning, Ivor. How are you?
I'm terrific and nice to talk to you, and thank you for that charming and gentlewomanly introduction to me.
Well, when we first met, I think it was in 2014 at Beatles Fest in Chicago, everybody who had met you, they go, "Isn't he charming? Isn't he charming?" So that became
Thank you.
That's the best way for all of us to describe you. So let's get some background here. So in 1964, you were working for the London Daily Express, but you were living in London to cover news. What kind of news were you covering?
Well, just to correct you very slightly, Jennifer, what happened was the London Daily Express had appointed me West Coast correspondent, which meant that I lived in Southern California. I lived in Los Angeles, and they wanted me to cover Hollywood and all that sort of stuff. And it so happened that soon after I took the job and was living in Southern California, that I got a call from my editor in London who said, "Get on the plane. The boys are arriving in San Francisco, and you will be traveling with them from start to finish. And you will also be writing George Harrison's column for him." Well, I vaguely thought I knew who the boys were. And, of course, the boys were the Beatles. And so
right.
I jumped on the plane. Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
And but at the time when you were in L.A., what kind of stories were you writing? What were you writing about? I mean, obviously, it wasn't the Beatles.
No, I was writing about. I was doing celebrity interviews, Marlon Brando, Cary Grant, people like that. And then I was doing divorces and other news stories that were happening on the West Coast. I mean, there was an earthquake.
Right. So you were quite familiar with celebrity at the time. You weren't just being thrown into. You were okay with dealing with celebrities when you got told
correct.
You're going to go. Yeah, so when you're going up, so you get this call first thing in the morning, August, I believe you wrote it was August 19th. Your boss says, "Get up to San Francisco." You throw stuff in a bag. Are you married at the time?
No, I'm a bachelor.
Okay, so take it from there. So you throw your stuff in a bag and head off to San Francisco. So,
and I say to myself, Jennifer, let's see, the Beatles. I think I saw them earlier this year. Yeah, I did. They were on a show called The Ed Sullivan Show in February 1964. And what I remember about that show was that all the girls were screaming from start to finish. I could hardly hear the Beatles sing. But they were a huge success. I mean, 74 million people tuned into that Ed Sullivan Show. And later I learned that Brian Epstein, the Beatles manager, said, "This is the green light for us to hit America and conquer America." And indeed they did several months later, and I was lucky to be on the journey with them.
So you hit San Francisco running. You have to, you know, almost beat your way through to get into the hotel and get a room, trying to convince everybody, you know, "No, I'm with the Beatles," you know. And, you get up to your room and so you get to meet them for the first time. And why don't you tell us about that?
Well, it was not a very auspicious meeting because Derek Taylor, who was the Beatles press guy, told me to come over and he'll introduce me to the boys. Well, I went over and I walked into their suite and the boys were there. They were watching color television, because they never had color television in England. They were watching pictures of themselves arriving at San Francisco Airport. And when I was introduced to each of them, each of them universally gave me a grunt, almost kind of told me to go about my business because they were interested in watching themselves on the telly. So it wasn't a great kickoff. It was not a great kickoff. And but once they knew me and once they realized I was sort of embedded with them, they became much more friendly, and we used to hang out in their rooms, and I used to raid their bars, much to the chagrin of Brian Epstein, who complained about the high charges of the minibars. I mean, it was ridiculous, but there it was. So we became much friendlier as the journey wore on.
Did the fact that you were from England help any?
I think it did. Because in a way, I came from the East End of London and they came from sort of the East End of Liverpool. We were sort of working class lads and I appreciated their very sharp sense of humor. So I think after, I would say, maybe 2 days, we became mates, if you like, and got along very well. And I enjoyed them every step of the way.
Mm-hmm. So did you have front row seats during these concerts, or were you standing off to the side of the stage, or where were you when they would go on stage?
Every single concert, I was in the front row. I was in the front row because I knew, and I was told by Brian Epstein and the road managers, that as soon as they played Long Tall Sally, which was the last song in their gig, as soon as that started, Brian said, get to the second limousine, where, of course, I was traveling in. The people were in the first limousine. So I was in the front row. I got the noise. I could hardly, in the front row, hear the Beatles playing because, as you know, the girls began to scream from the moment the Beatles hit the stage, and they never stopped screaming until the Beatles left the stage. And I always like to ask this question, and I'll ask you, Jennifer. How long do you think, in 1964, the Beatles performed on their concert tour of North America? Take a guess.
You know, it wasn't as long as the girls would have liked it to have been.
That's a good answer, a clever answer. come on, take just guess.
Wasn't it like a 30-minute show?
Yes, you're right. It was less than 30 minutes. It was 26 minutes. 27 and a half minutes. And I want to tell you, the Beatles kind of delighted. They always used to kid. Well, we made it in 26 minutes and 18 seconds. So it was, you could never get away with less than half an hour today, could you, on stage? But that's away with. Yeah. And that's what happened. A short, sharp, and away they go.
Right. So were you out front for the opening bands too?
Yes, I was. And I must tell you that I felt very sorry for the opening bands because there was Jackie DeShannon, who's still around, still doing very well. There was a group called the Righteous Brothers. And they, I want to tell you, that they finally left halfway through the tour because they said nobody is listening to them. Nobody wanted to hear Jackie DeShannon or the Righteous Brothers. All they wanted to hear was the Beatles. And so I can understand that the supporting acts felt a little bit jilted.
So you make your run for Long Tall Sally comes on. You make your run for the limousine. And who are you riding with in the limousine? Were any of the Beatles in your car?
No, the Beatles had their own car. They were in limousine number one. I was in limousine number two. Occasionally, a radio guy jumped in with me, but the cars were warming up. However, I can tell you this, throughout the whole tour, because some of the young fans got to the limousines very quickly and started rocking the limousines, and if you've been in a limousine that's been rocked by teenage girls, they have the strength of giants, and they can turn it upside down. Believe me, it happened to me. So what would happen was that the Beatles might make a getaway, but they decided a few times to escape under the subterfuge of an armored car, a meat truck, an ambulance with the sirens screaming, and off they went of course, in New York City, they got away by helicopter. So escaping from the stadium was a tricky maneuver.
Right. Now, did they think this was, at the time, did the boys think this was funny to get into these armed cars? Because I'm to understand later on they had had just about enough of this, you know, having to be locked up in some strange truck or something like that. But at the time, were they amused by it in the beginning?
Yes, they were amused in the beginning. And remember, in the beginning, afterwards, it got a bit ho-hum. It got a bit inconvenient. They used helicopters. But they loved to get into the armored car, for example, and particularly an ambulance, because as soon as the ambulance, the boys were inside and sitting on the stretchers, the ambulance went screaming out of the stadium and nobody stopped the ambulance. But the other thing what would happen was that when we arrived in a city at an outside airport, wherever it was, Chicago or Indianapolis, it was like royalty. The limos were there to pick us up at the chartered jet. We only traveled on the Beatles chartered jet. As soon as we arrived at an airport, there would be police escorts, motorcycle escorts. I felt like the Queen of England as I whizzed through streets of America with the Beatles ahead, me in the second limo, and a flotilla of motorcycle riders to make sure the Beatles got to their hotel safely and without any incident.
Mm-hmm. So they talk about usually, you know, after concerts and stuff like that, how bands, the adrenaline is up and everything. So what did the Beatles do when they finally got back to their hotel following a show? Were they all wired up?
Oh, yes. There's no doubt they were wired up. I mean, a typical day would be we arrived at the airport, and after we arrived at the airport, we would be picked up in the limos and driven probably to the hotel or to a convention center or to a place where the Beatles had a press conference. And so I would sit through dozens of press conferences, and I'll tell you this. They were very funny at press conferences, the Beatles, and you can see some of their press conferences on YouTube. But I always remember we arrived in Toronto, and literally 10 seconds after we arrived, we were at a press conference, and one of the Toronto newsmen said to the Beatles, "Hey, you guys, what do you think of the Canadian women?" Well, you know, you've been there 10 seconds. But the Beatles would answer in a very amusing fashion. And I must say, if you've ever seen the press conferences, and I'm sure you know the Beatles inside out, Jennifer, the Beatles were very funny at these press conferences.
I can imagine. Yeah, I've seen some of those. And please, everybody, excuse the dog you hear barking in the background. She's decided there's someone out the window. But just to make that into a Beatles topic, the dog's name is Matcha. And the first word ever spoken in the movie Caveman, which stars Ringo Starr, the first word you will hear is matcha, because it is the name, what they call dinosaurs in the movie Caveman. So just to make sure that the dog's barking is on topic,
Matcha. I'm going to interrupt you there a second. So welcome, Matcha, to the program. It's lovely to have you on. But I want to tell you that I'm going to ask you a question now. See how good you are. On the movie The Caveman, Ringo met an actress. Do you know what her name was and what happened to her?
Yes, it was Barbara Bach, and he married her.
You're right. You go to the top of the class.
Head of the class for me.
And he's
still married to her. And that was, 1975?
A long time ago, put it that way. A long time ago. But yeah, it's funny you should mention that film, because I don't think too many people have seen that Ringo film. He's actually quite delightful in it. But the most delightful thing, as you said, was meeting Barbara and marrying Barbara, and they're still married to this very day.
Yeah, actually, my husband absolutely adores that movie. He thinks it's just, and he uses the language from Caveman quite often, you know, when he, I can't repeat any of the words. I can't remember them right now, but, you know, as I said, you know, if he sees dinosaur, he'll say, oh, matcha. You know.
has matcha seen the movie The Caveman? Have you showed it to your dog?
I think we have. I think she's taken no interest, even when they call her name throughout the movie.
Very disappointing.
Yes, that would be it would be something to film, wouldn't it? As her ears perked up and she watched the movie every time they said my.
That's all for this week, Speedo fans. Come back next week for part 2 of our interview with Ivor Davis.